Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the endarkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there. Welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. Purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address real issues rather than defend positions. Well, you may have heard of that controversial documentary called Vax that caused quite a stir a few years ago. Well, I'm calling the first show of this new year Vexed, because so many people are vexed and confounded by conflicting narratives around COVID, vaccinations, Bill Gates, and the so-called New World Order. I can tell you in advance we may not get to any definitive answers, but we will address some definitive questions to help you navigate the confusion, the obfuscation, and the real and true information that is seeking to get heard. My guests today are not medical professionals, and so they will not be offering any medical perspective on COVID and its treatments. However, both of our guests are experts on propaganda and communication, and I'm very excited that they're going to be offering us a meta view, a larger overview of what is being communicated, how it's being communicated, and to what end. Both psychologist and conflict analyst Diane Perlman and progressive activist Marilyn Langlois are associated with Transcend International. We'll find out more about that. A solutions-oriented peace project based on the work of Johann Galtung that seeks to move beyond win, lose, and even compromise solutions to achieve breakthrough. Diane Perlman, PhD, is a clinical and political psychologist, conflict analyst, interdisciplinary social scientist, author, educator, mediator, and a lifelong human rights advocate, environmentalist, and patent holder. She is interested in the psychological dynamics of conflict and reconciliation and strategies of win-win conflict that are able of producing enduring security. Prior to this, she had a clinical practice at individual couple and family therapy, psychoneuroimmunology, and Jungian-oriented psychotherapy. She is author of a new book called Living Rights, Making Human Rights Come Alive. Marilyn Langlois is a convener of Transcend USA West Coast. She's a volunteer community organizer and international solidarity activist based in Richmond, California. She's a co-founder of the Richmond Progressive Alliance. She's retired from a career as a teacher, secretary, administrator, mediator, and community advocate. After focusing many years on being a single mother, she has become a self-taught advocate for peace and justice over the last 20 years. Having witnessed in her hometown of Richmond, California, and on travels to Haiti, El Salvador, Vietnam, North Korea, Uganda, and the former Yugoslavia Republic, some of the violence and poverty resulting from U.S. imperialism and cutthroat capitalism. Well, welcome, Diane, and welcome, Marilyn. Good to have you today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting us.
Okay. Now, you're both involved with an organization called Transcend. Let's start with that. Tell us more about this organization and how its work can help us frame issues like COVID and vaccinations, not to mention the deep political gap, chasm that separates our two narratives?
Yeah, thank you. Good question, Steve. This is Marilyn. I'll start with that. The Transcend Method for Conflict Transformation seeks, through dialogue, both and solutions that actually meet all of the legitimate goals of each party to the conflict. And by legitimate goals, we mean goals that each party aspires to for themselves, but which also they would reciprocate for the others, so that each party would be granted a similar type goals. And the bottom line is, and kind of non-negotiable bottom line, would be meeting basic human needs. That any solution has to make sure that everybody's basic human needs are met. So now, in thinking about what's been going on in the COVID crisis and what's behind it, I see this as part of the meta-conflict of our age. And this meta-conflict has been going on actually for decades and even centuries. And I see that as the super rich versus the rest of humanity. By super rich, I mean not just those who are pretty well off, but those who are, you know, multi-millionaires and billionaires who have way, way more personal wealth than they could ever use or would ever need to have a comfortable life. And with the rest of humanity, we just see so much suffering and many, many basic needs are not being met. And I just would point out, yes?
Go ahead. Keep going.
I was just going to say that the goal of the super rich to amass and generate even more wealth for themselves, we would not see that as legitimate because it's not reciprocal to everyone else.
Right. So what you're looking for through Transcend is really solutions that work for everyone as much as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just to bring this to the COVID crisis that we've been living with for the past year, COVID I see as a manifestation, one manifestation of this meta conflict in the way it's playing out, because there are so many ways in which the super rich are really engineering the course of this and how the responses to it. Another aspect of the Transcend Method, it actually uses medical terminology of DPT, that is diagnosis, prognosis, therapy. So we look at it as a situation that's when people are in conflict, when people are suffering, and we try to diagnose what's at the root of it, what is causing this, what is the prognosis, what will happen if we do nothing, and then we get to the solutions, what are some therapies. So on this issue, I did write a guest editorial on Transcend Media Service a couple weeks ago called It's 2020, What Would You Do? And in that, I invite readers to look back, reflect over the year, and think, what might they have done if they were in a position of great influence and power to address the situation with COVID and the coronavirus? And I offer two scenarios myself. One of them, and this has to do with looking at what the diagnosis is, what's at the root of this? And at the root of this is, I see, intense greed and addiction to wealth and power. And so one of the scenarios is called the global power elite scenario. What are they trying to do? And the term global power elite comes from Peter Phillips, who wrote an incredibly good book a couple years ago, Giants, the Global Power Elite, talking about how these various international networks and financial fund managers that themselves are incredibly wealthy, and they make sure that the super rich keep all of their funds. These are the networks like the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, World Economic Forum, and all of these different NATO, all these different very high-powered networks, which are the ones that make the decisions about our lives. So they are actually, I see them maintaining their wealth through a lot of deception, PR, propaganda at a very, very sophisticated level. And it costs a lot of money to do that, but they have endless money so that they can do it. So what are they trying to do? They're using certain tools to further their own agenda. For example, the bottom of it is about fear, and Diane's going to talk more about the fear aspect. Fear is the fuel that drives the pandemic engine. And then there's these faulty PCR tests, which are the linchpin on which the rollout of the pandemic measures depend. Then you have the lockdowns, which are the blunt force instrument to make it clear that life as we know it is changing for good. You have the masks and the face coverings, which serve as a useful gauge to measure overall compliance with the fear-based regimen. And then finally, we have these COVID-19 so-called vaccines, which serve as the deus ex machina, which may allow the terror of the raging drama to finally be quelled, or at least somewhat quelled, until the next deadly virus enters the scene. And so fear is at the bottom of that, and it's generating many, many profit opportunities for the super rich while many people are suffering. And then in terms of prognosis, if we go along like this, we have to look at how it's affecting the children of future generations. It seems that for the global power elites, children are the prototype human commodities for an artificial intelligence-driven new world order. And children are growing up to view other humans as biohazards and becoming more and more dependent on their electronic devices to meet their emotional needs. So it's really, damaging our humanity. But there are therapies, and so that's something we need to look at. For therapy, in my editorial, I talk about the One Earth family scenario. And the term One Earth family I got from Vandana Shiva, who uses it frequently. Her most recent book, called Oneness Versus the 1%, is a very, very important piece. She talks about both sides, both what the 1% and the actually 0.1% are doing in terms of extracting resources and damaging and ruining our ecosystem for their own personal gain. But she also envisions the One Earth family of people rising up, coming together, and taking control back of the earth, of the ecosystems, and lifting up our interdependence and our mutually supportive communities in a really healthy way. Also, in terms of solutions, a concept and principle that Johan Galtung mentions frequently is cooperation for mutual and equal benefit. This is something we really need to promote. In terms of addressing the COVID situation, early on last March, one of the concepts that really struck a chord with me is from Dr. David Katz of Yale, who talks about mm-hmm. total harm minimization. So we have to go on more than just, lockdown. We need to look at the impacts and how we can reduce harm, and not only with COVID, but all illnesses and all other things that people suffer from. And we've had so many scientists who have talked about really important aspects of this pandemic that have been silenced and censored, which we need to lift them up. You know, scientists like Susharit Bhakdi and Dr. Karina Rice, Dr. Sunetra Gupta, Dr. Zach Bush, they have really lifted up ways of looking at this to improve our own immune system, improve our nutrition, really more healthy ways of addressing the pandemic. And of course, we have many doctors who have promoted cures for COVID. If our own immune system and our nutrition doesn't quite do the trick and we get sick, there are cures that have been around for decades that are cheap and safe and very effective cures like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, which are anti-parasite drugs that have been around for a long time. And those have been silenced. So we really need to look at those. So basically, what we need to do is address this pathology of greed and move towards a massive distribution of resources, distribution of wealth, so that we can uplift the poor and rein in the rich. Now, some people might say, oh, you're just talking about class warfare, but that's not it at all. Actually, I don't hate the rich, the super rich at all. They're people too. I just see them as, ill, not well. They have suffered from a pathology of extreme addiction to this inordinate, obscene amounts of personal wealth and power and control. And we need to, heal them from that and relieve them of the burden of owning all that wealth. So we need to spread it around so that everybody can live a decent life. And people who are super rich, once they lose their wealth, leave them enough so that they can have a good life too for everybody. So, and this is certainly possible. Human beings are very intelligent. we have enough intelligence to figure out how to make these little small rectangular devices, which we can use to talk to someone on the other side of the world, or we can use to download an entire movie. So why can't we figure out how to address all the needs of people, you know, every human on and the whole human family, to have a decent life with good living conditions and you know, address all of our issues? I know we can do it. We just have to have the will to do it.
You know, that's a pretty big bite. You offered a lot of information there. And when I first started hearing what you had to say, oh my God, you sound a lot like the people I know that have been supporting Donald Trump. And one of the things, and of course, you're coming from a progressive point of view, obviously, in talking about the I would call it we distribution of wealth and well-being, as all of us rather than just a few. It's not when I interviewed Eleanor LeCain late last year, she also talked about the real issue being it's the oligarchs versus the rest of us. However, some of the things you're talking about, this global order, all of this stuff, I think that one of the things that's driven the support for Trump in this election has been the fear of that and the recognition that the Democratic Party, or at least the Democratic Party leadership, has been completely bought into this, into the COVID narrative. And even progressives, even people, there's nobody that I've heard on the Democratic side saying anything about any of the issues that you brought up, that Peter Phillips brought up. We haven't heard anything about that from people on that side. So what makes this a very strange conversation is that we're speaking into a media that has no intention of listening. Let me stop for just a second. I think we're at the break point. When we get back after this short break, we'll invite Diane to offer her perspective. And Marilyn, you'll continue. Steve Behrman, this is Wiki Politicky Radio. Back soon.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to Black and brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Okay, we have a tiger by the tail here at Wiki Politicky. Diane, why don't we hear from you for a bit in talking about how this narrative gets put across.
Okay, so I'd like to start with a little thought experiment, which is everybody has sort of the way of their understanding and putting their own narrative together and their own belief system. And I'll bet most people have had discussions or arguments with other people who disagreed. So first of all, think about what do you believe to be true? And say, imagine we could take more time doing this, but I'll go through it quickly. What's your story? How do you frame, what's your narrative about what's going on in the world and with yourself and with your health and with your loved ones? how strongly do you believe that what you believe is true? Is it based on actually studying primary material, or is it because of something you heard or that somebody told you? If you heard, got different information from another source, would you accept it? And how open are you to changing your belief system, of course, based on science? And also, there's more than one science, and there's more than one scientist in the world, and there are different ways of looking at sciences. So I've been interested in fear, and I'll start with a quote by Thomas Levy, who's a doctor and a lawyer, and he has a wonderful collection of treatments for COVID that either improves, treats, prevents, or cures. So he said, never before in history has anything or any event mixed fact, fiction, fear, and confusion like the COVID-19 pandemic. So, yeah, everyone says, obviously, that we haven't seen anything like this before. And the psychology and the complexity and the dilemmas are different. And in the beginning, I thought, oh, wow, this is amazing, that maybe this is what we need for our global transformation, and that we realize that we're all one and that we're all vulnerable, and that it's not just about me and my health, but I can't think about myself. I have to think about everybody else that everyone comes in contact with. But it seems like that optimistic, you know, maybe a little naive vision of the potential, which I still think that potential is there, has been very hijacked and very overwhelmed by incredible manipulation of fear. And some people in your audience might be familiar with Naomi Klein's shock doctrine, Rise of Disaster Capitalism, which describes how crises and disasters and upheavals, how they're exploited when people are most vulnerable. So fear is overwhelming and overriding and permeates everything. Also, people are more dangerous than they're afraid. And that one thing, I also wrote a piece about this on Transcend Media Service, which came out yesterday, I call it induced helplessness. And some people might be familiar with the theory of learned helplessness by psychologist Marty Seligman, which means that, I mean, it's based on experiments done with dogs where they're put in a situation where they get electric shocks and they can't escape. And then when they can escape, they don't, because they learned not to. So a lot of people learn to be helpless. You know, for example, maybe people who grew up in communist countries who didn't have a lot of control when they immigrate to the United States, they also don't feel like they have control over it. That's a huge generalization, but something like that. So I think that we're induced to be helpless and to feel helpless, and that all we can do is wait around for Big Pharma to come and save us with a drug or with a vaccine. And actually, we don't even hear, in the beginning, we would hear all about like remdesivir, and we're pouring, you know, millions and millions of dollars into research on that. You notice that you haven't heard about remdesivir lately, because it reduces hospital stay from 14 days to 11 days, which isn't really very much, when some of the treatments that Marilyn mentioned, like ivermectin, can prevent it. We don't have a sense of agency. Like, we don't hear on the news saying, go out and take care of yourself, boost your immune system. You can have milder symptoms if you have adequate levels of vitamin D. You don't have that. People who are vulnerable, who have comorbidities, who have risk factors, who have heart disease, diabetes, hypertension, obesity, they are vulnerable, and we should absolutely protect them. They should be in quarantine. We should bring them food. We should bring in technology, and we should help them improve their metabolic health. So the other thing is that everything is about public health, public health, public health. Public health has nothing to do with your own actual immune function or physical health. So everything's focused on behavior, washing your hands, wearing masks, distancing, and all of those things have some value, but that's not all there is. We're just really told that our helplessness and fear is being manipulated.
You know, here's what seems to be a bit of an issue here, and that is that, because I'm in touch with people all across the political spectrum. The self-reliance gang seems to be over on the right, and the learned helplessness gang seems to be over on the left. That so much of the infrastructure that's been created through our government to take care of people. Like here it is, you know, we're supposedly getting a very tiny little supplemental stipend for the lockdown, and it becomes very easy for the government to we're gonna guarantee an income, which sounds like it's really good, but when it engenders this dependence, and when it also engenders, oh, and by the way, if you don't get vaccinated or don't do this or don't do that or don't do anything, you're not going to get your stipend. We're not going to let you live. So what could pass as right-wing paranoia might actually be realism. And it sounds like, you know, both of you are sounding the alarm, as Peter Phillips of Project Censored has suggested, that there is this global elite, that this is not some made-up conspiracy theory, you know, promulgated by the right, but it actually exists, and that we are in danger of being overwhelmed by a totalitarian and Orwellian system, where, you know, you mentioned earlier that that ideas are censored, et cetera, et cetera. So say more about how the people who have, you know, who've been put into fear about COVID, and, you know, I'm right here in Berkeley, I'm around a lot of people who are totally locked down and think that that's all that they can do. How do we begin to open that conversation up, particularly when there's so much censorship in mainstream media of anything that suggests anything other than the allopathic medical vaccination and drug idea? How do we break through that to people who would be open to hear the conversation about the gap between rich and poor and how this is really exacerbating that, and help people emerge a little bit from their fear to begin to question this mainstream narrative?
Yeah, that's it's a good question. So I'll just say a few things and then Diane, pass it over to you. I know it's a real challenge because when you're gripped with fear and you have that mindset, it's an emotional response and it's hard to have a rational conversation about it. One thing that I do try to do is, because I'm as far left as you can get on the spectrum, I'm way left of all the Democrats and certainly not usually politically aligned with the far right at all on anything. But with this case, there are some points of common ground with certain people on the right. But I would say that we know on the left that the big money powers have completely corrupted our political systems, all the money in politics. We know that people with money can buy elections and they can, you know, finance candidates. And we see that and we struggle against it all the time. So why wouldn't you see that, look, this is just, again, the money powers at play trying to advance their agenda?
Diane?
Yeah, so just a few things. One is yesterday, like Judy Woodruff said at the end when she closed, said the vaccine is the only way out of this pandemic, which sort of floored me. I don't think she did her own research. And Newt Witkowski, who talks about herd immunity, said we've had 200 pandemics in the last 100 years, and there's a way that they play themselves out. And there are people who talk about, you know, protecting the vulnerable, isolating them, and boosting your immune system, et cetera. And Brian Stelter, just to talk about me, who talks about reliable sources and exposes all the manipulation and fraud. Yesterday, on Sunday, he said, you know, in the Israeli vaccines, there's a man who died a few hours after receiving the vaccine, but it has absolutely nothing to do with it. So there's kind of like a hegemonic, what's called a hegemonic belief system, which is the concept of Gramsci, Italian philosopher. And it's sort of that you maintain control by everyone having the same belief system that everyone accepts, and it's also like a groupthink, that to have an alternative view is suppressed and censored, and people are self-censoring, and people are being externally censored. And also, just in terms of the political spectrum, I'm independent, post-partisan, I'm off the right-left axis. I don't consider myself left or right, and I'm interested in problem solving and analyzing things. So that there's a process of mystification. So I read this chapter in a family therapy book in 1975 by R.D. Lang on mystification, confusion, and conflict. So he talks about mystification as a plausible misrepresentation of reality, where forms of exploitation are represented as the forms of benevolence, and the exploiters bemuse the exploited into feeling at one with them and feeling gratitude with unrealized by them as their exploitation, and not at least into feeling bad or mad even to think about rebellion. So we're, you know, gripped in this dilemma.
Yeah, Diane, you make a good point about feeling, you know, where people are sort of duped into feeling gratitude. I'm reminded of something you also mentioned, Steve, about, you know, checks are being sent out and people are talking about, well, maybe this will lead to a universal basic income. And but that might be tied to, you only get that income if you do what we say, if you get the vaccine or you do this or that. And I don't really see that as any kind of a really viable solution. I don't really believe people want to just have handouts and then, you know, they can live on a very minimal level and then do what they're told. I think what people really want is meaningful work that provides a living wage and that actually has good working conditions. You know, people are not by their nature inclined to just sit around and, you know, stare into space or stare into their computer screen. That people want to engage and they want to do something that's useful for their society and their community, and they want to be, you know, decently compensated, and they want to have good conditions to their work. So that's something that we could achieve if we did this massive redistribution of wealth.
Well, you know, I think that it's really strange, but I mean, of course, the one reason why Joe Biden won was Donald Trump. Were there no Donald Trump, the Democrats would have actually had to come up with a program that actually appealed to people. And as we're watching how the kind of pressure the Republican constituency who believes the election was stolen, who want to believe the election is stolen, consequently they do. Facts are really not that important. If only the Democratic Party leadership was as scared of their constituency as the Republicans are of theirs. So let's say after January 20th, Joe Biden becomes president. Let's even imagine that the two Senate seats shift in Georgia to the Democrats. Then the program that the Democrats are going to be putting together is going to be the entire antithesis of what you're talking about. It's going to be top-down imposition. That's going to be a singular narrative that's imposed that everybody has to hew to. It's going to be a continuation of globalization, corporate rule, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that the so-called resistance on the other side, those people are looking at this as the last-ditch effort. You know, I mean, that's, you know, I don't think a lot of people really have much faith in Donald Trump. But what they're recognizing, and I'm not among those people, by the way, is that if Trump is in there, then that will forestall some of the things that are going to be imposed by this global order that seems to be ordering everybody around. What's your take on that, and how do we create an opening for progressive? Progressives, as well as conservatives, but progressives, because they voted for Biden, to begin to embrace this real idea of overthrowing and overgrowing the whole disaster capitalism system, rather than these little piecemeal little Band-Aid fixes that don't do anything.
I think also, like, if it weren't for COVID, Trump might have won again. I think that the COVID helped Biden, and Trump got blamed for a lot of it, which I don't think he's solely responsible for that. I think we need a massive education program, mm-hmm. and I think there's information coming. You mentioned ivermectin, So there's a wonderful 10-minute video of Dr. Pierre Corey presenting to the Senate, U.S. Senate, on December 8th. And I mean, he's practically in tears. He said that it's 12 cents a dose that they, in a trial in Argentina, they gave to 800 healthcare workers, and zero of them got sick, and 58% of the control group got sick. So he said, this is close to, you know, to a miraculous cure. This is a solution to the problem. And there's a lot of knowledge about vitamin D, and adequate levels of vitamin D protects against virus, mm-hmm. and also in combination with zinc, magnesium, and other things. And there's a thought that what they're pushing for, drugs that can get patented and that can make, you know, billions of dollars, millions or billions of dollars. So there's a thought that the for emergency, they're doing everything on emergency use authorization, EUA, and their criteria for that. So in order to push a drug, to try a drug on a lot of people before it's approved and before it's fully tested, there has to be no other alternatives.
Sure.
So if there's an alternative, so they really trashed hydroxychloroquine, and I'm sure there are people listening now that they're going to shut their minds as soon as they hear me say that, but there's a Dr. Vladimir Zelenko in upstate New York, and he figured out a protocol with hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and azithromycin. And so what happens is when zinc gets inside the cell, it stops the replication of the virus, but it's hard to get it inside the cell. So the hydroxychloroquine gets it inside the cell, but also he said quercetin can do that, not as strongly. And there are all kinds of protocols. And one of the things that Dr. Corey said in presenting ivermectin is he said that if after this talk, you know, there are needless deaths, and they all say that, you know, many of the 350,000 people didn't have to die, and also people right. put on ventilators. High percentage of them die when they could get oxygen safely through a hyperbaric oxygen chamber. So we have solutions, and that we need to learn more about building our own immunity.
Well, we're going to take a short break. This has gone very quickly. There's so much information. We'll be back after this break and talk more about this time vaccine safety and some of the questions people have about vaccines. This is Steve Behrman. We're on WikiPolitiki.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
These are the sounds of a dinner. A dinner that almost didn't happen. A dinner now served, thanks to people like you. Due to COVID-19, 17 million more Americans may face hunger. Feeding America is helping our neighbors in need. And if you're able, you can too. Donations are being accepted at feedingamerica.org/coronavirus. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Feeding America, 200 food banks strong.
Okay, this is Steve Behrman. We're back with our guests, Marilyn Langlois and Diane Perlman. We're talking about the narrative around COVID and vaccines. I want to talk in this last segment, let's talk a little bit more about vaccine safety. Diane, you're interested in this issue of vaccine safety. What are some of the problems with the vaccine? What are the problems with them?
All right, so with the COVID vaccine, the Moderna and the Pfizer are using a new technology called messenger RNA, mRNA. So this has never, ever been used before. So this is new, and we don't have any idea about the long-term effects, which could happen in a month or a year or several years, and it could have to do with autoimmunity. There's some concern about whether it might affect fertility, because the shape of the spike protein is similar to the shape of a protein called sirtuatin, something like that, that protects the placenta. So there's some worry that it could teach your body to attack the placenta, so it might render people infertile. We don't know that, but there are some scientists that are concerned about that. In the clinical trials in the beginning, like 10 to 15% of the subjects in the Moderna, who are super healthy people, by the way, not representative of the whole population, had serious side effects, and some of them had to be hospitalized. There are nurses who are objecting to it. The AstraZeneca vaccine caused transverse myelitis in somebody, so they're concerned about that. The Pfizer caused Bell's palsy. And there's also a campaign, a psychological campaign that they're calling the adverse reaction to the Moderna. They're telling people it's an immune reaction, and the fact that they're having a reaction means that the vaccine is working. And that's purely pure psychological technique that they're using. And then there's a huge campaign to get Black people and getting Black doctors to talk to Black people to accept it, because of course, we're compassionate. We understand that they mistrust us because of the Tuskegee experiment and for many other reasons. So they should trust us. So there's a psychological campaign for that. So I just want to give one little anecdote that I know a man who's a brain surgeon, very healthy in his 30s, and he just got the Pfizer vaccine. So I asked him, I said, do you think if you didn't get the vaccine, do you think you would die? He said, no. I said, what do you think would happen? He said, you think you probably have very mild symptoms. And actually, if you're young and healthy, and especially if you're taking vitamin D and zinc, you probably have like almost no chance of dying, although everyone's afraid that it's a crapshoot. And it's like 0.003. So I said, and he did get his arm hurt and he was sick for half a day. And that was after his first dose. He just went for his second dose. So, I said, wouldn't you be better off if you just got COVID and had mild symptoms, and then you'd probably have immunity for life? There's also people think that immunity is very long lasting. And if there's not only antibody immunity, but there's also T cell immunity. But in the media, they just say, we don't know yet. We don't know if you have immunity, and people who, even if you had COVID, you should go get your shot. And they know certainly, like, it lasts for months, and there have been maybe 100 cases in the world where they think people have been reinfected. So people believe in pills and shots in America. And a lot of even intelligent, well-educated people that I know, if you bring up vitamins, they look at you like you're crazy, that it doesn't have anything to do with anything. But yeah, then there's science too. The science on vitamins, that is also science. And the science on ivermectin, 800 people, that's also science.
Right. Yeah. I just want to chime in. I completely agree with everything Diane has just said. And the reality is we really don't need this vaccine on an emergency basis. For one thing, there are these other treatments. There are numerous randomized controlled studies on ivermectin. So we really do have other options. And then the lethality of COVID is not nearly as high as the, fear-mongering media reports would have us believe. It's very, very, very low, extremely low numbers of deaths among anybody who's, under 80 years old and doesn't have underlying conditions. So it's really not that the urgency is not there to rush this and not take the time to fully examine all of these potential problems, like, you know, lack of fertility. That's a huge problem. And maybe it's not true, but maybe it is. They really need to, you know, study that before pushing the vaccine on people. One other thing, another anecdote I'd like to mention. I was at my podiatrist yesterday, and he said, "Oh, I got the COVID vaccine, the first shot. And he said he had to get it because he's on call at a local hospital that treats COVID patients. And one thing he pointed out, he said, now this has not yet been approved. It's actually just given emergency authorization, and it's still considered an experimental drug, an experimental vaccine. And one of the things he had to sign to, he said, anybody who's getting the vaccine now, you have to sign away your rights to medical privacy. Because they want to follow and see if anybody who has the vaccine has adverse impacts, all of his medical records from this day forward will automatically go to the CDC and the centralized authorities. And there's no sunset date on that. So here's the thing. This vaccine is an incredible goldmine for the manufacturers, the big pharma industry. The concept of trying to vaccinate all 7.7 billion people on the earth, that's unprecedented. So just the sheer numbers of vaccine is just going to be mind-blowing and make massive, massive amounts of wealth for them. And then the data that's being collected, if you imagine all these people who are now rushing to get the vaccine, signing away their privacy rights, all of that medical data, and it may go on forever, even once it's no longer needed for, you know, safety and testing methods, they'll just keep collecting people's medical data without people having any way of stopping it. So it's a big concern, something that I think people should talk about.
Well, you know, it's interesting that people should talk about it, but you will not hear anybody talk about this on mainstream media. This is not a conversation that will happen on CNN or MSNBC, probably not even on Fox. And meanwhile, you pointed out to me that a very well-known pediatrician, Dr. Paul Thomas, lost his right to practice medicine in the state of Oregon because he's a pediatrician, so he allowed the parents to help determine how often or when the children got vaccinated. Do you know any more about that case?
Yes, he wrote a book called The Vaccine Friendly Plan. Mm-hmm. So when he went to medical school, and I'm sure the people out here who don't believe there's a connection to autism, but anyway, there was like 1 in 5,000 cases. It was very rare.
Yeah.
And then when he was practicing, he gave a vaccine to a kid. Maybe just one thing I want to add here, that the schedule that we give 72 doses of 16 different vaccines to, you know, by the age of 18. And it's like 2 months, 4 months. And in Europe, they don't give multiples. And also the problem isn't the antigen in the vaccine. The problem is the adjuvant that they put in aluminum or polysorbate 80 or formaldehyde, or they put different things in the vaccine to shock the immune system. And they're toxic. So when you get that, then, you know, and if you give 6 of those at once in the arm of a 2-month-old, then it's problematic. And in Europe, they give them fewer and they space them out and then they give them later. And there's some cases where they think, oh, if you give them after certain ones after the age of 3, that you reduce a lot of the risk. So he's done a lot of research. Also, people who got a lot of vaccines younger have higher rates of ear infection and, you know, different, you know, visits. And also, it's related to sudden infant death syndrome. And this is also on the insert. This is not, sort of a completely radical, crazy thing, but a lot of these are on the insert in the warning of the vaccines. So he was advising his patients to stay, you know, I mean, some of them came to him because their regular pediatrician threw them out of their practice, so they started questioning anything. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he worked with people on reducing the risks and spacing things out. And also, if you give things like vitamin C before you take a vaccine, it reduces the side effects and increases the effectiveness. So he just published an article comparing those who had full vaccination and those who weren't vaccinated, and found out that those the unvaccinated were healthier in a lot of respects. So that after that, they shut down, they suspended his practice.
And interesting.
He had patients who love him.
And this was a study among all of the children who were born into his practice. So this was a retrospective study where he looked at the records of all of the children, all these children who had been born, some who had chosen, whose parents had chosen not to vaccinate them, and some whose parents chosen did to vaccinate them either partially or fully according to the CDC schedule. And he followed them for 10 years. And he came out with this amazing result that Diane mentioned. Of those who had no vaccinations, overall their health outcomes were better.
Yep, I saw that study, and obviously that didn't fit the narrative. So what we have, the new word is a situation. We have a situation where people have no idea what to believe. Everybody is on their own. There is a stonewall preventing on mainstream media and more on social media, preventing these conversations from happening. So the question is, how do we act, and particularly on this issue of informed consent and the new Nuremberg protocols, which in some places like California, vaccinations are mandatory for any child going to school. There are no exemptions. There's no more religious exemption, no more medical exemption. What is the future of informed consent? What is the, will we, is there such a thing as a right for us to say, no, here's a medical procedure that we're not willing to take? What, where does that stand as far as you can see?
Well, I think we need, I have this idea of rewriting the informed, the consent forms, which giving more background information. But in Washington, D.C., where I live, the D.C. Council just passed a law, which the mayor did not veto, which allows minors to consent to vaccines without their parents' knowledge or approval.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, this is for the Gardasil. You know, maybe I'm getting off on a track, but the Gardasil is the vaccine that they give to 11-year-old girls to prevent them from getting cervical cancer when they're 58, and they're also giving it to boys.
So, it's unbelievable. How much is being put through without our knowledge and without our consent, and the shameful job that the media is doing in simply falling into the narrative. How do we deal with this? We've got about 4 minutes left in the conversation. What are the steps that people can take to begin really intelligent conversations about this issue and begin to move beyond the two-party divide around this and bring people together across the divide to secure not just our medical rights, but to secure accurate information?
Okay. Well,
you know, that's go ahead.
Okay, I'll be brief. So people who raise these issues are often dismissed as a conspiracy theorist. And also, we didn't even get into go near that Bill Gates gave $10 million to the World Health Organization and all of that. So when you're dismissed, if someone's dismissed as being a conspiracy theorist, I said, you know, just say that, well, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm also not a conspiracy denier. I mean, that shuts down the conversation and shuts down thought. So I encourage people to be a conspiracy hypothesis. Say, this is my hypothesis, that this is safe or it's not safe, and let's see where the facts line up. And I don't care where the facts line up. I care about what's true. I don't have an investment in something being truer. I don't want it to turn out any particular way. I'm open to the facts lining up on either side. So, Marilyn, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I think it's just super important for people on all sides of the political spectrum to follow the money. You know, follow the money, whether you're left or right, because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to divide us. The last thing they want is for us to get together and challenge the hegemony. And we just need to do it and come together and bring them into the human family to, with, you know, relieve them of their excess wealth. We saw an example of this, actually. Mark Chrisman Miller put it on his blog, and a few others have mentioned it. In New York City, apparently, recently, there was a big demonstration with both the Black Lives Matter and MAGA, the Make America Great Again folks. They came together to demonstrate against a law that would have introduced required and mandated COVID vaccines. They were, both of these groups were opposed to it, and they came together. I think that's a really good sign. We need much more of that.
I call it a sign of the uprising, that people are waking up and wising up, and we need to proliferate that. That's what I'm doing with this radio show, with Mobilized.news, the platform that I'm working with. And it's what you're doing with Transcend. Anything more you want to say about Transcend? We've got about a minute left. We're also going to have a link to that on the on our WikiPolitiki page for this show, and also on Mobilized.news.
Okay. All right. So I would like to say, you know, acknowledge Johan Gautung, who's the founder and who also designated both me and Marilyn as being the conveners of Transcend on the East and the West Coast. But the idea of Transcend, it's about creating a new reality. And the new reality includes, as Marilyn said, it includes and transcends the opposites, which is also similar to Carl Jung's theory of the transcendent function, which when the opposites are splitting further apart, you create a new reality that includes both of them. And the legitimate goal would be health, that what we care about is our health, and what we care about is being safe. And we also care about our freedom in our society, and that there are ways to achieve health if people can be educated and supported in developing their own agency to boost their immunity.
That's it, having agency. Thank you so much, Diane. Thank you so much, Marilyn. I wish we had another hour to wrap this. I'll be listening to this interview a couple of times. A lot of really valuable juice in it. This is Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki. We'll be back again next week.